Ja.
Ja. Ja.
Okej. Och då ska jag trycka på mute hvis jag ska slå av. Okay, we are ready to start. Welcome to our Nordmug friends. We are giving introduction to psychology of aging here in Gjøvik today. I'm starting with a short note on aging. Aging is changing, and that's what happens when time passes. And it's important to underline that aging is not only decline and even not only growth. Aging is both growth and decline. And this is psychology of aging then is about growth and decline in psychological functions. Psychological changes. Cognitive functions, changes in personality, changes in coping styles and in behavior, the psychology of aging people. And the psychology of aging is also about how individuals are coping with aging, how they relate to it, how they understand it, how they experience their own aging, age changes, and how they relate to them, how they cope. So I'll start with cognition, changes in cognitive functions with aging. And cognitive function is about learning, memory, intelligence, thinking, and so on. And what is most important is that speed, learning speed, decreases with aging. Speed in thinking, speed in all kind of functions, also motor functions, moving, and so on. The time, reaction time increases, and thus the speed of learning decreases. That means that older persons need more to have the possibility of regulate the time they need for learning, self-regulation of speed, so they are not supposed or expected in learning situations, expected to learn exactly as young people do. And older people, aging people also are very different. Individual differences are increasing with age, and that means a way of taking this into consideration and to give learning older people the best opportunity for learning is to have a large amount of self-regulated speed, so they can use the time they need. And then older persons make relatively more use of experience-based knowledge compared to thinking new about new situations, relating in new ways to things that happens. And they have a larger reservoir of experiences and make more use of these experiences when solving problems. That could be a very good thing. That is a very good thing if the problems you meet are well known. They are problems they have experience with solution with solving. It may be more problematic when completely new situations emerge. Then young people have easier to react in completely new situations. So if this way of thinking, this change in cognitive functioning is positive or negative, depends upon what kind of problems you are meeting and are about to solve. In some situations in working life, studies have shown that older leaders take decisions faster than younger leaders. They have a longer reaction time and they have more need of time to learn, and the cognitive operations may take longer time, but they can give faster reactions. They can react faster. They can make faster decisions. Why is that? It's because of their experience. While young leaders may have to think through every problem and think through what they learned in the management school, and to weigh each argument against each other. Should I do this? What did the textbook say about that? On the other side, it's also probable that this action will lead this, and so on and so on. While older leaders may take it on their experience-based intuition. They have experience, made such decision before, and can take quicker decisions. So that you are need more time doesn't mean that you use more time or that you take longer time to every kind of problem. But it's easier when the problem is known. When there is a problem that you have experience with. In working life, many things changes very fast, particularly in technology, things changes fast, and it can be difficult for older person to keep up with it. And younger person has a pre, because also they have more experience. So but in other important sections of or parts of working life or a leader or an employee also is dependent upon social relations. It's dependent upon understanding how people relate to each other. And this is not changing so much. People are not changing so much. What you experience you have of how people relate to each other, social competence, is very experience-based. And the experience you have is valid. The experience you have from 20 years ago, 30 years ago, are more valid than experience you have with technology. Yes. The majority of aging people retain or expand at least one cognitive ability in high age. When you measure cognitive abilities as in intelligence, you have different kinds of measuring intelligence, and you have different dimensions of intelligence. You have fluid and crystallized intelligence, and you have a lot of other functions beneath that. You have understanding of numbers, of vocabulary, words, and of social interaction. Many intelligence tests use many dimensions of intelligence to measure, to come up with one single measure, the intelligence on the IQ. So, an American study by Chaya followed people from about in the 60s for 30 years up to 90 years with a test that measured verbal meaning, understanding of numbers, understanding of space, verbal fluency, and ability to argue, to resonate, and found that over this period it was a decrease in the overall intelligence measure. IQ, if you like, were decreasing at an average from about 60. But almost every individual in the study up to 90 or 88 years, they retained or improved at least one of these functions all through the aging. And which function they retained or improved was dependent upon what kind of functions they made more use of. Use it or lose it. So what's happened with aging is that you maybe not be able to expand or retain functions in a very broad sense, in very many functions, but the functions you make most use of you are able to retain up in high ages. Yes. Yeah. When we see that the cognitive functions measured as intelligence decrease at an average from about 60, fluid intelligence often earlier, while crystallized intelligence are retained longer, crystallized intelligence, the ability to use the experience you have, fluid intelligence, the ability to see new solutions to new problems. That ability are declining earlier than the ability to use the experience you have, which is retained longer. But the curves showing decrease from about 60 or earlier for fluid intelligence is the average of individuals who are at different places in their own development process, aging process. And what seems to be more important for how their cognitive system function is not how long time is it since you were born. It's more highly correlated to how much time do you have left. Because when approaching death, the system, the biological system, and the cognitive system, are decreasing very fast in a short period, and the system are kind of being disintegrated, and the cognitive function can be one indicator of impending death. But you don't know that in advance, of course. This is not, you cannot measure time to death in living people. And it's very difficult on the individual level to say, to measure cognitive functions and say, okay, you have 2 years left, or you have 2 months left. That's not possible. But on the aggregated level, you can see stronger correlation between time to death. You can see that post-mortem, after the fact, than to time from birth. That means that the curve, which is starting very early, are decreasing very slowly. The average for all persons are decreasing very slowly. May for each individual be retained longer and decrease faster in the end. When people are dying at different ages, and you take an average between those individual trajectories, you get this slowly falling curve. But while it's for individuals, most probably are more steep in the end. It's the difficulty to find what's happening in individual from average curves. That's the importance of this point. Each individual doesn't necessarily follow the average curve, because the average curve is disguising this different trajectories for on individual level. Yeah, memory is a sensitive mechanism, and memory is what we most often see as the cardinal sign of aging. You are forgetful. Forgetfulness is often taken as the cardinal sign of psychological aging. When people in their 60s, even in 50s, even earlier also, feel they are beginning to be forgetful, they think, oh, I'm aging. I'm becoming old. I forgot this. I'm becoming old. But memory is a very sensitive mechanism. That memory is very sensitive for many things other than age. Also for age, of course, but also for many other things than age. Yeah, I'd like to take a little intelligence test. Just listen. The living room is situated against the street with heavy traffic. The kitchen is situated against the backyard. The grandfather is sitting in the living room and reading his newspaper. Mother is in the kitchen and making dinner. The children are on their way home from school. Who is disturbed by the traffic noise? Any suggestions? Okay, the right answer, which you get the point for in this test, is grandfather, because he is situated in the room with the traffic noise, closest to the traffic noise. What older people often say, answer to this question is, no, it couldn't be grandfather, because he has a bad hearing. He can't hear it. Or, oh, it couldn't be a grandfather, because if he has been disturbed, then he had moved to another room. What is that? Is that that's the wrong answers? Is there more poor answers? There are more complicated answers. So we often see that by age, you are not able to think so. Simple, they are more complicated, they are much more conditions, and there are your experiences that complicate how you experienced the world around you. Okay, we talk about memory as a sensitive mechanism. It's influenced by primary aging. It's universal. In my age, all people at my age, they complain about forgetting names. I forget names. It's probably very strongly linked to some mechanisms in the brain, dependent upon aging. And we have also heard that reactions, cognitive functions take more time. When cognitive functions take more time, it's also more difficult to register all things that happen around. And particularly if things happen very quickly, in quick sequences, new things happen all the time, then it's more difficult to remember when you need more time. Because you haven't fixed one information really before another information is coming, and then it's disturbed. Then we have what's called loss in the service of growth. We lose brain cells over the life course, and brain cells are lost in different speed at different ages, and one of the most most strong or heavy or what we'll say a loss of the brain cells happens very early in life around birth and the birth process. And this starts is the beginning coming before a very quick and large improvement in cognitive function during the early years in childhood. And some mention, like Gisela Labouevieff, that this loss is necessary to improve the functions, to grow. You have to lose something to be able to grow. And that's also true all the life, that brain cells die and you the brain cells that are not used are kind of dying and taken away to give room for new information, new experience. It's called pruning. You have to, like gardeners are pruning fruit trees. They take away branches to get new branches to grow more freely or give more fruit. The brain has to take away branches that are not used anymore and give room for new branches to grow. Loss in the service of growth. And this loss could be experienced as forgetfulness in some at least for a period. Self conceptions are very important for how we function. If you believe that we are becoming forgetful by aging, it's increasing the probability that we are becoming forgetful. That has been shown in many experiments where we have induced in people a feeling or information about their age. By age, you are becoming unable to remember, or control groups are told that age doesn't make any difference about your for your remembering, and this gives different results in memory tests. Those who believe that it's important, that it's necessary to be forgetful by aging, are performing worse in memory tests. And also, if you have been given negative words, but kind of primed with negative words as dementia or forgetfulness or senility or whatever, even if those words are primed by these words by subliminal perception, by giving these words in so short time that you're not able to experience them consciously, but the brain registers them. You don't know that you have seen them. Subliminal perception, like when you, as was tried in some years ago in cinema advertisement, if you show the bottle of Coke on the screen for a short time that nobody could experience it, but it was registered by the brain, no one did know about that they have seen this advertisement. But when they left the cinema, they bought more Coke than they had done if they didn't get this picture. the subliminal are making impression or have some effects on us. And the impression of or priming of forgetfulness or senility forgetfulness and these negative words result in people performing worse on memory tests. Even if you don't know that you have seen this negative words, they maybe have a kind of a affinity, or what shall I say, they meet some what is already there in the brain of cultural attitudes, what you have learned through all your life, that there are something negative by aging, and that you become forgetful. So it's kind of revived and made more effective by this subliminal perception experiments. An American psychologist named Becca Levy, who has done much of this research. Diseases are dangerous for the memory. Every disease that reduces the capacity or the wakeness or the agility of the body is in danger of increasing forgetfulness. Because when you are not completely awake, you are not registering what's happening. And when you are not taking in what's happening, then you are not able to reproduce it. You have not forgot it because you have not registered it, but it's experienced as forgetfulness. Particularly diseases in the circulatory system, in the heart and the veins, and what's called the blood distribution system is important for memory, because the brain needs supplies of fresh blood to be able to function, to register what's happened. So forgetfulness is very often primarily a result of poor learning. Poor learning is a result very often of less awakeness and not sufficient attention in the situation. Medication, of course. Medication, interaction with medicines. I shan't say much about that, but it's medication that reduces or lowers the conscious attention, that relaxes, slows the psychic reactions, the cognitive reactions, tranquilizers, sleeping pills that are working all through the night and gives hangover in the morning, are in danger of inducing forgetfulness. Malnutrition, particularly malnutrition that also weakens the attention, and what weakens attention is often that increases attention also. Coffee and sugar, which gives uneven distribution of blood sugar, and when we are down with low blood sugar, then the ability to register what's happened is decreased. sensory decline, a normal sensory decline may reduce the input to the brain. And you don't learn what's happening, and the brain doesn't get enough stimulation, and the cognitive functions are hampered. As in what's called sensory deprivation experiments with students, where they artificially are decreasing or almost blocking sensory input with mirror, what's called glasses, with milk white glasses, given not giving information, ear clocks, and some fabric around the skin that reduces the skin senses, input through the skin senses, and also lying on a waterbed or something that gives less information from the senses, giving information on the where you are, the position of the body, and so on. What's called the equilibrity senses. And such students in the such experiments, they lose their ability to perform the most easiest cognitive operations, like how much is 2 plus 2 after some time in this situation. The cognitive system collapses without input from outside. So that's important for memory, to have input. Yeah, so that could be understimulation or overstimulation. Both are problematic. Too much information that the older brain is not able to process, often because it's coming too quick. And understimulation, which is a sensoric deprivation. Understimulation and sensoric deprivation. And I also like to mention what you can call kind of a mental escape from the situation, from a situation that is unengaging, that is difficult, boring. Sitting on a nursing home with no friends and no people to talk with, sitting alone in the flat at home with no people coming around, nothing is happening, and the brain are starting to stimulate itself, and you are escaping from that situation in fantasies and in dreams, daydreams. So when you are escaping the situation, you are learning less from the situation, and you are in danger of becoming forgetful. But it may be necessary to escape from this situation through life review or reminiscence in order to establish what is called ego integrity, which I will come back to. But that may be necessary, but it may have, if it happens with a person sitting alone and with nobody to interact with, may result in this decrease in cognitive functions. But if it is in an interaction, life for you in an interaction, someone are listening to it, someone are interested in it, then they give some connection to here and now. Okay. So there is a normative cognitive decline. It's normal to reduce cognitive functions. Um, And that be because maybe because of less cognitive resources for learning, slower information processes, as I mentioned, and that older persons are less able to ignore irrelevant information, more distractible, more often catched by own associations, and less able to concentrate. So if you have very important information to convey to an older person, you have to be make sure that you have the full attention of the person. And you don't let the person escape with the associations of what happened 20 years ago, or if the daughter comes tomorrow, or if the sun is shining today, but does it rain? Or my son used to say, and also so on and on. Associations that come very quickly, and more quickly in older persons than in younger persons. So if you have important information to convey, you have to make sure that the attention is with what you say. But the cognitive system is plastic, it can be changed, it can be improved. And education, for instance, reduces the risk of cognitive decline. By using the brain, you retain it. You retain its functions for a longer time. Retain it better. And cognitive abilities are trainable, even at very high ages. Specific training, even people with dementia can be trained in cognitive functions, but the training has very specific effects, or more specific effect than in younger persons. They're less generalizable. If you train in understanding numbers, you get better in understanding numbers. If you train in reading a foreign language, you get better in reading the foreign language. But to a lesser extent than in younger people, this generalizes to other cognitive functions. You can retain cognitive abilities and train them by cognitive activity, by thinking, talking, solving problems, using the brain, even crossword puzzles or whatever it is, Sudoku, using the brain. I used to solve crossword puzzles from time to time, but I have to change, because if you have found one crossword puzzle author and you know what his, you know all what his his solution words are, so you have to change to another to get some challenge. So if you solve problems just automatically without thinking much of it, it's not improving the brain functions. And also physical activity is important for brain function, for cognitive functions. It's shown in many experiments that physical activity gives immediate better memory. How is that? Why is that so? Well, maybe it's because the physical activity delivers more blood, fresh blood to the brain, fresh energy to the brain. It's also said that physical activity more prohibits unnecessary cell death. And physical activity also can often improve the depth in sleep. when you are using the body and you are exhausted, you sleep better and you are becoming deeper in sleep, and you have more of this cognitive work that is taking place when you sleep, while you dream, consolidating the memories or the experiences from the day. Okay. Yeah. I talked a little about intelligence already. It's about to adapt to environment, or it's learning ability, ability to use what is learned, as I mentioned. That's learning ability, is more like the fluid, and ability to use what is learned is more crystallized. It's also called mechanics and pragmatics by Paul Baltus. Yeah. So, as I mentioned already, older people are better on this right-hand side of this dichotomy. Ability to use what is learned, crystallized intelligence, and the pragmatics. One special kind of cognitive function is called wisdom. And it said that by aging you get wise. Maybe. You have maybe a larger opportunity or option or possibility to develop wisdom through experience, if you have much experience. But the experience is not enough. It's not enough. I talk about different kinds of definitions of wisdom, but what is more important is that it implies both cognitive functions and reflections, philosophic thinking, and also affective elements, feelings. And I look more into that. The cognitive dimension of wisdom is about knowledge, understanding, and tolerance. Tolerance for uncertainty, ability to accept that thing is not only black and white, it's more complicated. Understanding that people are not only good or bad, people are complicated. And to accept that it's not, I'm not sure, it's maybe, I don't sure. You don't need to rush to conclusions very quick. Wise people don't need to rush to conclusions. So, that's how it is. Maybe it's like that, but the other side, it may be also like that. And the cognitive also includes that of knowing the limitations of one's known knowledge. What Socrates said, the only thing I know is I don't know. Something like that, he said. The only thing I know for sure is that I don't know. Socrates. He was a wise man. And the reflective part is self-insight, understanding of oneself, less preoccupation with oneself, more able to see the perspective of others. This is also what's called decenteredness, decenter. Things that happen in old age, as in among youngsters. Young people are very self-occupied and selfish and egocentric. But growing up means to be more aware of other people, of taking the perspective of the others, And again, in aging, it's the possibility, or some see that aging is another opportunity to become less self-centered. And then the third affective part is compassion, empathy, social responsibility, and altruism, feeling for other people. Be more touched by other people's suffering. Yeah, so it's old people like this, understanding, tolerant, little self, to a small extent self-centered, compassionate, empathic. Is this a description of older people? Yeah, it could be, but not all older people are like this. Experience and old age may give an opportunity to develop such characteristics, such capacities. But it requires that you are taking part in the things that happens to you, that you are present in what happens, that you are that you're not just flowing through experience without any making any impression on you. Yeah. So in general, the research agrees that yes, wisdom increases with age, as a general thing. It doesn't increase in all older people, but there is a connection. Wisdom also has some link to the next theme I'm talking about, personality. It's kind of part of the whole person's way of reacting to his world or to his society, to other people. And personality is exactly that, the characteristic pattern of thought, emotion, and behavior, what characterizes each person. And we are all different. We are all different personalities. In the science, in the study of personality and personality changes with age, it's two main approaches. It's developmental models, which is dominated by the Erikson model, which I'm coming back to, and it's trait theories, which is dominated what is called the Big Five, or a five-factor model. And these ways of thinking are to a different degree underlining stability or change in personality. The developmental models are describing changes over the life course. Changes at least in what is their challenges for persons. I'm coming back to that. And also Gustav Jung, with his developmental model, was seeing very important developments taking place late in life, that of finding oneself, becoming oneself, find identity, who am I, which is often said to be the main task in early puberty. This was also important in the in the middle age or in old age, to finally find out who am I. Yeah. I shan't go through this model because it's for the whole life. But what Erikson said is what was important is that the challenge in old age is to find integrity, or it's also called ego integrity. And the ego integrity is about to accept the life you have lived as it has been, for good and bad. Okay, it didn't work out exactly as I wanted, but so it is. It's okay. I can accept it. I should have done this. I shouldn't have done this. I forgot to do this. Okay, but that's how it is. Now I am here. It's okay. I accept it. That's part of ego integrity. And also a part of ego integrity is to be less self-centered, as we have talked about, and more occupied with the world around and the future generations, how is things going to be after I am out of this world, after I have died, what's going to take place? I'm worrying about how is the world going on. It's kind of also connecting oneself to make a bridge over the gap between life and death by following the future of one's children, or for the younger generations, or for the country, or for the nature, for the environment. It's kind of a way of projecting oneself into the future and, in a way, bridging over the gap between life and death. That's also an important part of the ego integrity, is to accept to die without very much fear, at least. Accept that the dying is the consequence, a natural consequence of living. To accept dying, to accept to die, is, in this model, easier when you can accept your life. It's a kind of Janus face, seeing in both directions, one face in the facing death and one face backwards to the life behind you. Life review, reminiscing, is a way of relating to the life behind, and that may be necessary to accept the life you have lived. You may have to go through and think through by life reviewing to be able to accept your life. And if you then are able to accept your life, you are also more easy to accept that you shall die. I have lived a full life. Okay, I can die. Oh, I should have done this. Oh, I forgot this. Oh, what the wrongs I have done. And now it's only so little time left. I shall not, I must not die. So it's the connection between life and death, attitudes to life and attitudes to death. Now, one thing that happens with aging is how we relate to time, and it's very more difficult to evaluate the time spaces, time lapses correctly. Time passes faster and faster. For me now, The time has passed so fast that I'm not sure I'm able to finish this. Every time I don't learn, every time the time is running much faster than I think it is. That's part of aging. So it is. The trait approach to personality is that it's mainly stability from the age 20, 30, but it's also tendencies to change in aging. And the general tendencies are that towards more introversion. People in age are more introverted than younger people. More emotional maturity, less neuroticism. They are more, in a kind, sane in their way of relating to things around them. They are less open to experience. They like to do what they have liked it, what they are used to, and not so eager to find new ways. And they are more friendly and warm and agreeable. And they are more conscientious. They are more doing things right and are very, very doing things very correct. And that's the tendencies. Yes. And then you also see one tendency that there are less personality differences between the genders. Men and women are more growing more alike, more in a sense as they were as children. I take just one example from a study of a Norwegian study by Solheim, who followed a group of 113 years old up to up to 58, and someone else continued her work up to the same persons for 70, and they found that among the 13 years there were no gender or sex differences out of 15 personality variables. No difference, gender differences at age 13, 9 at 30, 6 at 58, and 1 at 70. So the gender differences in personality are less outspoken, or they are less clear. As the American psychologist David Gutman called this the unisex of old age, he explains it with less power in sex roles, less power in roles and norms at all. People are more free to behave like they in the way they like, and they can open up for characteristics that they haven't outlived during their lifetime. So women become more aggressive, men become more soft and kind and careful, caring. David Gutman have done this with studied this in different cultures and found this pattern in the different cultures, but it's 1987, and since 1987 it has been some changes in the sex roles, and there are more equality now between the sexes than it was then, and it has been in other cultures. So this is probably not so clear today as it was at that time. But the way it's not too clear, it's not so clear today, is that it has men and women are becoming more like, also through their grown-up lifetime. But it's also, you can also see that it has a parallel in sex hormones. They are not so, we'll say, testosterone and estrogen distribution, to see, to say, just a couple of these hormones testosterone are decreasing in men, and estrogen are increasing, and vice versa for women. So the balance between the sex hormones are more even. So that could also be an explanation. Coping styles, how you relate to problems, for instance, what you may see as problems with aging. We have this dichotomy of Lazarus between problem-focused coping and emotion-focused coping. Between problem-focused coping is to go out and change what you are dissatisfied with. If you lose your job, you find another job. If you get a health problem, you take some action, go to the doctor. Emotion-focused coping is to change the evaluation or the meaning of what is the problem. Oh, I lost my job, it doesn't matter, it's not so important to have a job. Or, okay, I have a bad headache, but it's not that bad, and compared to other people, it's not no problem, it will go over, it will be improved. So, what you see with aging is that the older people use more emotion-focused coping. They change the evaluation of how they see the problems. They don't, to the same extent, go out and change the problem. Try to solve the problem. And that is also the dichotomy that is used in many other theories or conceptions about this, how aging are making differences in how we act in front of problems. And a German psychologist, Jochen Brandstetter, he has launched this concept of accommodative flexibility. Accommodative flexibility means flexibility to change the values, to change what is important. That is kind of changing the meaning of the problem, changing the evaluation of the problem, kind of emotion-focused coping. But if you no more can get a job, you say, you have... you have, or you more often, if you are old, resign about it. If you have the value of being very strong and athletic as an old man, you may see that you have to work so much to accomplish it. And you may resign. It costs more to be as you were when you were young. To kind of stick to the same ideals as you had when you were young would cost you so much energy to fulfill. You can't run that fast as you did before. You can't jump that high. You can't do so many things at the same time as you did before. You have to concentrate on a few things. You can't let everything happen at the same time. You have to select what's most important for you. So that is to comply to the reality. And in a way, it's a flexible way of changing goals and preferences according to changing options or possibilities. So what Brandstetter says, that this way of coping, as we see increasingly in old age, is a flexible way. Older people are flexible. It's not negative, and it serves adaptation. It serves adaptation as it gives less depression, better well-being, more future optimism, and more internal locus of control. That means you have higher confidence in the ability to influence what happens. I can influence what happens. When you resign from have been important to you, and restrict your actions to things that you are able to perform, then you get the feedback, I'm able to perform. I'm able, I have this ability, I can impact the world. If you continue to do things that you no longer are able to do, you get this feedback that you are not good. You are not able to do things. You are out of control. So then it could be better to accept the reality and adapt to and do other things. Start to read more instead of running all the time. Start to contemplate instead of jumping around. Concentrate with talk with a few people instead of being in big congregations and meetings where you can't get hold of what's going to happen. Relate to a few people at one time. Such things, adapting to reality, because you are not able to take so much many things in simultaneously. But this may convert into a resignation that is maladaptive, because we see it when age is blamed for all that is evil. Oh, my knee is hurting. I'm old. Like the man who came to the doctor with his aching knee. And he was very fond of dancing and he was not able to dance as before. And the doctor said, yeah, but you are so old. You must accept that some things like that happen when you're old. And then the man answered that, okay, my other knee is just as old, it's good. It cannot be only old age that is the cause. But doctors and relatives, the society at all, has the tendency to give, to attribute problems among old people to aging. Everything that is bad among old people is due to aging. It's not. Like when Langer and Dean, when they studied in a nursing home, that people were sitting around in the corridor. And they were sitting there. And the researchers asked them, why do you only sit there? Why don't you take a walk up and down the corridor here? Just move around a little. No, I'm so old. I'm so dizzy. I'm so afraid to fall. And then the researcher said, yes, this corridor is very difficult. This corridor is it's a little tilt in it so that it can be easy to clean. It's cleaned with stuff that make it very slippery. Yeah, that's what they said, nothing more. They say that. What happens? The older people started to walk around on the floor. Why is that? Probably because they had got an understanding of the problem, explanation of the problem, out of their own aging into the environment. What is in their own aging is there's nothing to do about it. Oh, I'm so old, there's nothing to do. The floor is there, I can attack it. It's not my problem, the floor is difficult. Young people also have problems with this floor. So giving the attention away from the aging to the environment could activate. Because explaining things as caused by age is very passive, inducing passivity. But then is the problem, find the balance between adaptive and maladaptive resignation. That's the problem. Yes. To cope with aging is to cope with time. Aging is time. In Norwegian, alder means time. Aging is time. As to cope with the past, to cope with the present, and to cope with the future. And to cope with the time running faster and faster. Because it does, for some reason. Immediately after Christmas, there is another Christmas. When you were young, it was eternities between Christmas and Christmas. Yeah, we have talked a little about reminiscing, life review, looking back. Informative storytelling is connecting with other people and telling about old age, for instance, in school and kindergartens, to younger relatives. The most powerful of this in concerning personality and changes in personality and adaptation, I suppose, is the life review, because it involves a kind of working on problems or challenges or good things that have happened through your life, to integrate it. I talk about that in connection with the ego integrity. Yeah, this is a kind of positive functions of looking back. And I mentioned also before that the possibility of looking too much back is that you may become forgetful out of it. The result may result in forgetfulness because you are not present here and now. If you are not present here and now, you are not learning what's happening here and now, and you are will become forgetful as a result. But then also looking back may reveal negative events and capture the person in negative contemplation, depression, discomfort, and unhappiness. And again, this is more easy to find solution to if looking back is taking place in relation to another person or other persons. Yeah. Yeah. Mindfulness is a very popular word or concept nowadays, and in aging, it refers to being present in the aging process, to accept aging, but without accepting the negative stereotypes about kinds of decline thought to be inevitable. Finding the reality, what is necessary. There are taking place changes in the aging process that we don't like. Something in the aging process we don't like. If we are not able to see what we don't like or are running away from it, no, I won't look at it, no, then we may also be more able to capture or see what is positive. So what is positive by aging? Some talk about more time for contemplation, more time for deeper relations. More freedom to do what you like, less control by others. Yeah, people talk about such things. Yes, so then we have the future. And the future ends. The individual future ends. And this is called finitude, or the consciousness about that is called awareness of finitude, to be aware that life is coming to an end. There is limited time left. And this awareness of finitude seems to create some changes in the person. Inner values, meaning, is more important than outer values, rewards, money, praise. The external world or the external rewards that you can get from doing things is less important than the inner rewards you get from doing things. And you can see that already in among seniors in working life in their 60s, that it's more, you can't buy away older workers so much as you can with younger workers. You can't buy them to do things that they don't like. They more need to see the meaning of what they are doing. And they're more easily motivated by doing a meaningful job, contributing to some meaningful. That doesn't mean that money doesn't mean anything, but it's the change in the value or the faith of this different sources of rewards. And it also seems to be more important to supply or to secure social support, emotional support from a few. It's not so important to collect friends. As young people today, they are collecting friends. They have a lot of connections to other people. And they may need to do that in order to learn something about the world. They need to connect to many people. Older people don't need that much to learn about the world anymore. It's more important to have the emotional support, and then you stick to the few persons that you know give you emotional support. So that's a effect of awareness of finitude. And also there's a tendency, when you're aware that the time left is limited, that you are more interested in positive experiences and avoiding negative situations. You just put off the television when there are some ugly things happening there, or negative things or bad things happening there. You're seeking for the positive experiences. And that has also been shown in memory experiments, that older people with awareness of finitude more often remember positive words. If you have a long list of words, learn this list and try to test it afterwards, and you compare young and old persons, you find that that the old ones remember more of the positive words. Good, nice, or so vidare, and so on. While the young persons more remember both the positive and the negative. The negative is more important for the young people, for the negative things contain often more information, and young people are needing information to be able to exist in the world, or to develop in the world, or to be a part of the society. They need information. So the positivity effect, Laura Carstensen introduced that concept, the positivity effect. Older people are searching for more attention to positive information. And then there's a disengagement from egocentric, individualistic concerns, and that's what's called decentration. In the end, I come to the end. And there's a hypothetical connection between death anxiety and thinking about death as it develops through the life course. And this is based on research, different kinds of research, that shows that if you ask people during the last 10 minutes, what do you think about? Do you think about death? Do you think about sex? Do you think about the job? Also, and so on. Then you find that in puberty, death is more often thought about than in middle age or in as young adult. And then increasingly over the life course, people are thinking more about death. And older people are those who are most often thinking about death. They are closest to death statistically. But if you compare with death anxiety, you see that people in the puberty, when they are starting to think about death, they also are anxious about death. But this anxiety decreases over the life course. It looks like this is hypothetical disconnection, but this is based on many studies. What does this mean? That means that in the care of the older people, you have older people as clients, and you have younger people as carers. And you have younger people as also younger generations in the family. Older people think a lot about death, but they are not that anxious. Younger people don't think so much about death, but when it comes on the agenda, they are more easily accessed to their anxiety about it. What does that mean? If an older person at the nursing home say, I think I'm going to die soon. I wish I could die soon. Then there's probability that the younger care worker is provoked, get death anxiety provoked, and are more inclined to escape this, difficult theme. But it's not that difficult theme for the older person. So this is about communication, differences between young people and old people and communication. You could think about that. I think we stop there. Thank you. Yes.